that's worth knowing, with attitude that's worth showing. Get ready to listen, let's go. The show is called Maria. Welcome to Maria. For honesty and to the point news. Opinion straightforward, you can't lose. Get ready, subscribe, let's go. Welcome to Maria. You know you're gonna hear a lot from guests with credentials that say, I won't let America go astray. The show is called Maria. Get to know Maria. Listen to her truth and views. You're bound to love Maria.
Okay, well, welcome to the second segment of Food for Thought with my fabulous co-host, one of my favorite people on the planet, Will Tuttle. If you're not familiar with Will, then that means you haven't read his book, which is required reading for any listener to this show, The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. Check out his work at willtuttle.com. Well, hi, Will. Welcome back.
Hello, Maria. It's great to be here with you again. Thanks.
Well, I'll tell you, today's a great day as far as I'm concerned. It's a banner day.
Hey, I'm so glad. That's terrific.
Will, I sent you a couple of articles since our last show, but we have a bunch of new listeners since our last show, so maybe we can explain to Ted about what is Food for Thought. What's it about?
Sure. Food for Thought is a discussion that we have once a month, and it's about the connection between our treatment of animals for food. I should probably actually say our routine mistreatment of animals for food and for other uses that we have for them, entertainment and clothing and accessories and research and other things, but primarily through food, and how that affects us. I mean, not only does it affect the animals, cause them enormous amount of suffering, and affect the earth, I think one of the really interesting things is just to look into the environmental devastation that's wrought by animal agriculture. Enormous and really repressed by the media. But I think on a deeper level, how it affects us as human beings, as spiritual beings, as people who want to raise our level of understanding, of empowerment, of being capable of being a force for peace and harmony and wisdom and so forth on this earth. And I think really the one of the underlying ideas I think that's important to kind of work with and understand more deeply is about freedom, and especially not only physical freedom, but intellectual freedom and spiritual freedom, that it seems in the outer world in many ways that there are incursions into our freedom happening. As, you know, we talk about that, and I know you talk about that a lot on your other shows, by the administration, by the military, and so forth, corporations.
Right.
But really, to look at ourselves, you know, because it's so easy to, in many ways to point the finger of blame at those bad people out there that they're doing terrible things, and there's certainly truth to that. But to look at ourselves and look what our actions are doing, and to look at the ancient spiritual teachings of wisdom that I think resonate with us on a deep level, that if we're agents of enslavement of others, we are basically sowing seeds of slavery for ourselves. And this is something I think not only that our culture doesn't understand hardly at all, but even the progressive movement, the people working with 9/11 Truth or with you know, everything, just the whole progressive movement, still hasn't managed to address this. And I think it's because it's so deeply ingrained in us as little children. Hard to ever get out of the box of the idea that, well, no, they're just animals. I mean, they're just, you know, you just enslave them, use them, rape and kill, whatever. It doesn't matter. They're just objects to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very difficult for us, I think, as people in this culture to, to question seriously. But that's what this program is about, is to kind of look at the ramifications of our routine mistreatment of animals, primarily for food, because that's where we all do it. You know, it's one thing to point a finger and say, oh, there's some, and there are, there's some sadistic scientists that are doing horrible things on animals, but
right.
about ourselves. You know, what are we what are we paying for and causing by our daily food choices and other choices?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not at all about being guilty or anything like that. It's just to understand we've all been forced into a certain way of thinking by the forces that work in our culture, and it's very interesting to see what those forces are.
Right.
You know.
Right.
You know, the military, I call it the military-industrial meat medical complex. It's very, very powerful, and they get a lot of wealth. And so, you know, the media, all the institutions, you know, really, basically, are ramming meat down our throats. And people think that they're choosing it freely, but I don't think it's really a free choice.
Right, exactly.
The things to think about.
Well, you know, I've been saying for years, you know, especially when I do my shows on voting and people that actually believe votes matter, I tell them, you only got two votes. One is you vote with your dollars, and the other is you vote with your fork.
Right, right, yeah.
And, you know, for some people, that's a hard, that's really a hard concept for them to get. And, of course, we're not here to make anybody feel guilty over their food choices.
No, not at all.
You know, we're here to say, you know, I can tell you from my own personal experience, Will, as a person that did a lot of spiritual teaching and lectures, et cetera, at the same time, at that time, I was still a meat eater. And no matter how many people would try to tell me that you can't have one without the other, I made up all the same excuses most people do until that eureka moment hit. And for me, it was reading John Robbins' second book. I think that was The Food Revolution.
Right.
And once I read that, it just clicked. And then it was done. And then I said, well, I can't be a hypocrite and tell other people you can't be spiritual if you're eating, you know, meat. What I can tell them is you're going to be a lot more spiritual if you're not.
Right.
Because I found for myself personally, besides a zillion health benefits, an inner peace that I never had before. And I think without that inner peace, I couldn't deal with the trials and tribulation of daily life.
Right.
Because it really does cloud you. It clouds you, your capacity to think. And you know, it goes back to what you said earlier, freedom. And I don't think people connect what they eat with freedom.
They don't. They don't realize that they're eating slavery, for example, really. I mean, that's not only eating it, but causing it by foods that we're eating.
Right.
The worst form of slavery, I mean, you know, imprisonment in tiny little torture chambers, basically, is what most...
Right. Well, you know, it was interesting. I met a young man who was released from being incarcerated, and he had gotten a job at the Humane Society in town. And he said now that he walks around the cages where the dogs are in, he realized that he's the jailer now and how depressed that's made him.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of interesting. And I guess sometimes, you know, you got to be there to really get it.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, so the basic truths I think that you're saying and that we're trying to just illuminate here are the kind of things that are, I think, at the very deep level, revolutionary, but I think in a very positive, beneficial way. You know, it's asking us to question the very living core of our culture, and there's... really, I think nothing more beneficial than anyone can do is to question on such a deep level. You know, saying to question the current administration, I think that's very healthy. It's great, you know, or what's happening, you know.
Right, but you know what? I hope this weekend, which is Easter weekend, they print the menu at the White House, and I always like to look at how many meat choices the president eats on any given holiday. And I really do compare it to, A, his senility or lack of brain power, and his knack for violence.
Right.
You know, I remember, I think it was Isaac Singer that said, and maybe I'm wrong, that there's no such thing as a meat-eating environmentalist.
And, right, you know, right.
I remember, you know, and I always had two suggestions, you know, that we have a vegetarian in the White House, but doesn't look like Kucinich is going to be that guy. And we ship a couple of truckloads of marijuana to the White House to chill them out. Maybe they'll go for love instead of war.
Right. Well, I think that's an important point. You know, it's no accident that if you look at what the meals are of the wealthy elite, historically, actually, the wealthy elite has eaten since in my book, I talk about that in the World Peace Diet, but for 10,000 years, basically, the wealthy elite, like Henry VIII or any of these people, they're the ones that eat a lot of meat, dairy, and eggs. I mean, the typical population could never afford that. That was really just the food for only the wealthiest people.
Right.
Yeah, the masses, most people, just until very recently, in the last probably 60 or so years, with the advent of what they euphemistically call the Green Revolution, which has been the application of massive quantities of drugs, basically, in the form of pesticides, herbicides, insecticides, and artificial chemical fertilizers to the land, if we've been able to grow enough grain to feed enough animals so that and then subsidize the whole thing massively so that everyone can have cheap meat, cheap dairy, and cheap eggs. But basically, that was something that was only for the wealthy elite, and that was why, in a sense, why people wanted it, because only the rich, like in China, only the rich had white rice, and pretty soon everybody else wanted it too, even though it's much less healthy for you
right.
than rice. But it was food of the peasants, was the food of, it was less refined. And actually, they never had the diseases of the rich. They lived much longer, healthier lives, probably a lot saner, probably less cruel and less domineering. But the history of it is so interesting because, by the time the historic period emerged 3,000 years ago, it's obvious that the wealthy elite, the kings, I used to teach classes in the classics, like the Iliad, the Odyssey, and the Epic of Gilgamesh, and you see the kings, they buy and sell people, they buy and sell women, the wives, so-called wives, they buy and sell, and of course, animals underlies the whole thing, and their wealth is the animals, and then their food is basically nothing but alcohol and wine of some kind and the flesh of animals or maybe some milk and maybe some bread.
Why they were so fat and had such short lifespans.
It's just so interesting to see that, and they're just doing nothing but engaging in war. And I think I was listening to somebody the other day who was saying that if you just think about this, and I thought he was true, really. He said, you just think about it. Think of the people that you know that are vegetarians or are vegans, and just compare them to the people you know who eat meat regularly, and you'll see a big difference in the people, that they're more peaceful, they're more apt not to want to go hunting or fishing or killing animals.
Well, they do have that. They are reporting a lot less Americans doing any kind of hunting or fishing or any of that.
Is that right? Well, I know they're doing less hunting, and I think you're probably right maybe even about fishing, which to me, of course, they're now trying to push that as much as they can.
Right. They don't want their industry to suffer a loss of money.
Right. The industries want to push that, and it's, that's a whole other thing we can talk about at some point, but I know people who are really terrorized, actually.
Right. Well, I got this little a little news blast out of Conscious Choice magazine, which is how you and I met serendipitously.
Uh-huh.
And it's called Kick the Meat Habit. It says, if you've ever toyed with the idea of going vegetarian, March 20th is the day to give it a whirl. This year, the Great American Meat Out celebrates its 24th anniversary as the world's largest annual grassroots diet education campaign. Advocates of nonviolent plant-based diets will use the day to encourage their friends and neighbors to give veggie burgers a chance or swap their dairy for soy or almond-based brands.
Uh-huh.
The Global Meat Out is coordinated by the Farm Animal Reform Movement. They have individual events organized, around the country. Celebrity backers include Joaquin Phoenix, Alicia Silverstone, Bill Maher, Casey Kasem, Mary Tyler Moore, and Ed Asner. And their slogan this year, Will, is Kick the Meat Habit. It's good for your heart. A plant-based diet also promotes animal rights and is good for the environment. And if you want to find an event near you, look, I'm doing a free public announcement for these people. Meetout.org. So that's this Thursday. So I'll make sure I put this show up on the day of the meet out. How perfect will that be?
Right. Yeah, today is the annual meet. Thursday is the annual meet out, and it's a day of raising consciousness about all the amazing benefits, really. Remember John Robbins? I was talking to him. He said it's like being at Las Vegas, and everything just lines up. You know, it's good for your heart, it's good for your health, it's good for the environment, it's good for the animals, it's good for your peace of mind. I mean, everything, all the way along. There's nothing where there isn't a benefit that comes from questioning the violence towards animals for food. And so I really encourage everyone to, if you have any, sort of, I guess they're kind of like these knee-jerk thoughts that we all have of why I have to eat meat, you know, whatever they are, to kind of question them. It's not easy to question them, but the other day I was talking to someone, she was saying, Jesus ate meat, and all his disciples were fishermen, and so that means that fishermen must be great people, and it must be really good to eat fish, and fish really are put here for us to eat, and so forth. And I realized that this is not a thought that she came up with on her own. This is basically part of the programming of our culture. That everyone,
right, the lies we're told.
This programming, you know, we have all these stories that we tell the children, and this is taught in Sunday school, and it's reinforced.
Right. Wasn't it Richard Schwartz that wrote that book, Jesus Was a Vegetarian?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a...
Because I got a great interview with him on that in the archives.
And who was that?
I think it was Richard Schwartz.
Right. And there's a book called The Lost Religion of Jesus by Keith Akers that goes into it, I think, very well.
Yeah, I had Keith Akers on the show, too.
Right, and that's a very good book, and I quote that book quite a bit, and you're right. It's interesting to see that the people who were contemporaries of the followers of Jesus after he died were all agreeing that the earliest Christians, mm-hmm, have records for it all, were vegan. The movement was renowned. It was known.
Right, and I know you got a big letter, because I got one, too, from one of our fans in Canada who was so happy over what she learned on the last show. She couldn't wait to tell her parents about it.
Well, I know, and it's part of the mythos, you know, the story that we're just not allowed to question, you know.
It's like 9/11. Everything's got, you know, the sacred meanings. You can't ever question it, or, you know, you're the world's worst person.
Right, right. But it's so healing, I think, to begin to realize that a lot of these stories really have no basis in fact. Mm. They're told over and over again, and our culture just uses them in order to reinforce certain behaviors that I think basically benefit the wealthy class. I mean, it benefits the people who make war. It benefits the people who profit off of war, off of disease, all of these things. They profit off of people who are basically disconnected from their feelings,
right?
Who are desensitized to the suffering of others. See, I mean, the thing about eating animal foods is we're forced as little kids to desensitize from what we're doing. And so when we do that, then we get desensitized from the suffering of others in general.
Right.
And so we can, we have a president now where, you know, basically we're torturing people. And he's hoping, I think, I mean, the whole military-industrial complex is basically hoping that the American people are desensitized enough or numb enough that they won't care about this. And the problem is that once we do it to others, pretty soon it's going to end up happening to us. You know,
I remember Charles Patterson's book, The Eternal Treblinka, which was excellent.
Right. Yeah.
And he had a quote in there that said, what we do to, it's a very short step from killing animals to killing humans.
Right, right. And Isadora Duncan actually said that, and so did Isaac Bashevis Singer, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really true. In my research, I saw that it was really after we started manipulating the females for to make them have more, give more milk, and have certain babies that were larger of sheep and goats and cows, that women also lost their status and began to be seen more basically as just mothers, you know, or meat to be used sexually.
Mm-hmm.
The domination of the feminine really comes out of the domination of animals for food and seeing the animals merely as meat to be either eaten or meat to be manipulated to profit us in some way, to give us a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole mentality gets ritually injected into the boys in this culture through all the I went through it, believe me. The locker room jokes, whole way, you know, you grow up looking at, you know, we're taught to look at girls in a certain way. Girls are taught to be looked at.
Right.
Way. I mean, this whole thing is a huge slavery. We don't see beings as spiritual beings worthy of respect and kindness, not in, and not to be manipulated and used, because every day we're eating animals that are seen that way, and so we're eating that whole energy and we're causing it, and it's and it's pervasive, and yet it's absolutely invisible, and it's a taboo to talk about it, you know, and people, it's so painful to look at, I think, for most people, even spiritually oriented people. I just had this big talk with a minister, you know, and she just, even though she prays for animals and even has a prayer circle, for, you know, some kind of prayer website for animals, but from her point of view, you know, there's a lot of animals that are just put here for us to eat and for us to use, and we should just promote fishing, promote hunting.
Mm-hmm.
That's good creative action for us human beings, and we need animals to eat.
Right. But you know what? If they really wanted to go back to the Bible and look at the original story, and I think the whole thing was a story, the reason the animals were created was supposedly because God saw Adam was lonely. And he created the animals as friends for him and told him, out of all the trees and shrubs, you can eat.
Right.
You know, so he was the first vegetarian until, you know, he got, I guess, a little lonely, lonelier, and suddenly, oh, I'll make you a wife. You know, here's Eve, pick a wife. and then the story, of course, of the evil snake that turned them bad. You know, they went from apples to basically, you know, eating anything on four legs that moved. So people have to really reevaluate even their own personal interpretation of Scripture instead of the doctrine that their religions give them, because when they go into the, you know, the God wanted these sacrifices, well, you know, their God himself says, you know, I don't need you to sacrifice these goats and sheep to me. You know, and I think God was, if you look at the story, disappointed that Adam and Eve had this need, and his people had the need to feed off animals and worship even a golden calf. I mean, you know, if that was my creation, I would think I'd be pretty bummed out too.
Right, yeah. Right, and people still use the, as you know, use the Bible, and especially, and I, to me, that's something that is almost worse than it, but it's been happening. I mean, people use the Bible to justify everything. You know,
absolutely.
Or to justify slavery, to justify beating women, dominating.
Justify hating people that have a different skin color, different sexual orientation. You know, I just got a fabulous movie. I already know it's fabulous. I haven't even seen it yet, Will. For the Bible Tells Me So. And it's about whether or not God really condemns loving homosexual relationships and how to be a Christian and not hate gay people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so once I get to review it, I'll be sure to have these people on my show.
Right.
You know, so, you know, people think they have to choose between being Christian, which I've always felt was a verb instead of a noun anyway.
Right.
And, you know, the bullshit that they're taught to hate, you know, and to approve of different wars and different killings and, you know, it just everything. And to me, that stuff's just man-made garbage just for control.
Right.
You know, I mean, you know, when I was a little girl, I was raised in a very repressive religion. And, you know, they preached Armageddon and, you know, all these people getting destroyed, and the only people getting saved are going to be us, and you got to be baptized to be saved. And I remember, Will, being maybe 10 when I went up to the leaders, the overseers, and I just looked at them after another hard-hitting, scared, shitless sermon about Armageddon and people burning into other people and their eyeballs popping out.
Wow.
And I went up to them and I said, I need to ask you a question. And they said, well, what is it? And I said, the Bible says God is love.
Right.
I said, so how could Armageddon or any of this be real? And you know what their answer was to me? You're just a girl. What do you know? But I, you know, that stuck with me. To me, those three words as the most valuable of the entire book. God is love. So you have to be able to discount the rest, because if it's not love, it's fear.
Right. Exactly.
You know, but
And fear. You know, you don't control people with love. You control them with fear.
Exactly. But why the need to control? You know, I always tell people when they talk about control, or my kid's out of control, or can't get my relationship under control. And I say, you know, most people can't control a bowel movement. How can you control anything else? you know. And I think you have to see the realism in that statement.
Yeah.
But, you know, even the thought that we can control anything is another program.
Right.
You know, and people have indeed forgotten how to just be in the present moment.
Right.
And how to be at peace in the most craziest and weirdest of situations that life is apt to throw you into.
Right, exactly. Well, and that's really why I think it's so helpful, you know, just to talk for a minute about our own welfare.
Mm-hmm.
Reduce, or, you know, what I would advocate is completely eliminate paying other people to cause suffering to animals and eating that and feeding it to our loved ones, because the energy of the vibration of fear and terror, I believe, is in the meat and organs of animals. And this is, you know, this may be to a few people. I think most of the people listening to your show, Maria, will probably understand this. But I know there are a lot of people in our culture, you know, are really programmed, I think, at a deep level to be materialist only, in the sense that nothing exists unless you can measure it physically, and there's no spirit, there's no eternal, you know, eternal dimension to what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they think that you're just eating a physical thing, a piece of meat.
Right.
I think, honestly, there's been a lot of, it's well known now that if, for example, someone gets a heart transplant, a liver transplant, a kidney transplant, something like that, they will find, and this is shown over and over again, that their emotions change. I mean, they find that, you know, they have different feelings.
Mm-hmm.
That this, whoever, you know, donated that organ,
right,
that they had an emotional makeup. Mm-hmm. That is now beginning to impress itself upon the person who now has their organ.
Right.
And so this is well known. I mean, there's countless stories of people saying, my God,
isn't that because
I had this, you know, kind of desire to do this. Now I just want to do nothing but ride motorcycles. And they
right.
find out that, you know, the guy was a motorcycle rider. You know?
Right. Well, you know, there have been many doctors that have proven, and especially top psychologists, that your body holds memory in every cell.
Right, exactly.
You know, we think the only memory we have is in our brain.
So that's exactly it. So if we're eating foods, or especially milk and eggs too, that concentrate these feelings, not only the adrenaline and all of that physical stuff, but just the feelings of grief and terror and outrage and pain and futility and enslavement that these animals feel.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's difficult in our society today, really, just the way the whole thing is set up, to go through life in a sense, with a sense of positivity and joy and love and freedom, because there's so many demands on us. And I think a lot of the reason for that is that we're basically, many people, especially people who are eating these foods, have an underlying sense of being anxious, you know, and that things are not...
Of being what? You're getting a little low on
that. You know, something bad's going to happen.
Right.
That feeling. And they're eating foods of animals that are basically feeling this all the time. You know, that
mm-hmm.
something bad, they know something bad's going to happen. Animals are very intuitive. I've seen this over and over again. They're not so stupid. And they know they're in a system that is absolutely heartless. You know?
Well, and I mean, because of that huge meat recall last month, look at how many people have seen the terror and the torture of those animals, because it first was online and now it's like everywhere.
Right.
And you know, how can you look at that and not make the connection? You know, I've been in, as you know, and my listeners too, the past 2 months, I've been in a sort of, you know, an alternative universe with the prison system here.
Right.
And what I find is, when I watch, even if I'm on a visit, if I was on a visit with my son and we're sitting there laughing and joking and whatever, the other parents who are crying and screaming and flailing and full of anger also have their bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken with them, or, you know, their Taco Bell or their McDonald's.
Right.
And I can't help but look from the food to their energy.
Right.
And, you know, and I know they don't make the connection. And, you know, they look at me, I'm sure, as if I'm crazy, because we're actually having a good time. You know, of course, I know how to step out of the illusion.
Yeah.
But, you know, I look at that constantly. And I remember in the early days when I was first becoming a vegetarian, I was at a very fancy dinner party. And the people around my table, I mean, they had more degrees than 20 thermometers between them. And they were talking about some of the most important issues of the day, But all I could do was focus on the hunks of dead animals they were shoving in their mouth while they were talking.
Yeah.
And I couldn't make the connection, and I zoned out on whatever they were saying. And maybe it was just my own personal ego. I don't know what it was, but I couldn't respect their education and
right.
watch them shovel that food in their mouth.
Right.
So for me, I was turned off, I have to tell you. It was like they could talk from here to doomsday, and I really don't want to hear what they have to say.
Yeah, you know, it's true. Because, like Jesus said, you know a tree by its fruits. And if people don't get that basic connection of kindness to those beings that are vulnerable in our hands, how can we really say we've made much spiritual progress? Actually?
Absolutely. I don't want to have any part of it. You know, if I see a dead animal on the road, you know, as a Reiki master, I immediately Reiki it
yes.
so that, you know, its spirit is free. You know, I don't want it to be trapped in that shmush that's on the highway.
Right.
You know, I was at a woman's house, a total stranger, and her pets came up to me, and she said, these pets are usually very nasty and violent to anybody that comes in the house.
Uh-huh.
And I said to her, but animals can sense energy.
Right.
And they know when you're not there to hurt them.
Right.
And, you know, I really don't have that problem. I mean, I haven't come across any big bears lately, so I can't vouch for that. But it really does help you keep your cool at times that I think anybody else's heads would just be exploding.
Yeah, yeah. There's a basic sense of inner peace.
Right.
And when we're being peaceful in our life, we're thinking peaceful thoughts, we're living our life in a way that reflects our aspirations, which are for kindness and love and joy for everyone, and to actually live that and not just... Because I think the system, the way it's set up, it makes a profit on the more people are afraid and the more they're basically self-oriented. You know, they only care about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're all disconnected from each other, and we're more easily controlled, and we become consumers. You know,
mm-hmm.
consumerism is really, I think, the actual religion of this country.
Absolutely. Well, they always refer to us as consumers, never citizens.
Yeah, right. I mean, you've got to consume to be somebody, and the more you can consume, the more basically successful and happy you must be. And that materialism that underlies everything and all the stories that we tell each other, I think really makes us disconnect from the suffering that we're causing to the ecosystem, to
right.
everyone.
I remember once asking my spiritual teacher, Sun Bear, who's no longer on the planet, you know, what about sin? Do you consider anything a sin? And his answer was very simple. He said, to me, the only sin is suffering, causing yourself or any other living thing to suffer.
Interesting. Wow.
And, you know, I remembered that, you know, it was like ingrained in my brain after that.
Right.
Will, we need to go to a short break. When we get back, I'd like to talk a little bit about India and the poisoning of all those dogs that they're doing there and what
right.
your thoughts
okay.
are on it. So stay with us. You're listening to Food for Thought with myself and Will Tuttle. We'll be right back.
The Maria Show is brought to you by her listening audience. For 8 years, Maria has depended on the generosity of her listening audience to subscribe and donate to continue bringing you the best information out there without corporate sponsors, commercial ads, or private agendas. Won't you take a minute right now to make a donation or subscribe? You can donate through PayPal. The account is Maria, M-E-R-I-A, at maria.net. That's M-E-R-I-A at M-E-R-I-A.net or right on her site at www.maria.net. Send a generous donation to show your support and respect for the countless educational shows you become accustomed to, like the one you are listening to right now. Subscribe through the site, www.maria.net. You already know the value of real independent media. You're listening. Donate today. It's your show. Show your appreciation with a generous donation. Now, back to the show.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to Food for Thought with myself and my co-host, Will Tuttle. And again, the name of his book, The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. Will, before the break, I mentioned that article that came out a while back, I think it was the beginning of the month, on India poisoning over 100,000 stray dogs. To them, I guess this is their best way of taking care of too many dogs in the population.
Right.
Here in America, of course, that story made quite a stir because, you know, most people spend more on their dogs than they do on their kids.
Right. Well, you know, the thing is, of course, in this country alone, I don't know off the top of my head the statistics, but we kill millions. I think it's around 30 million dogs every year. Mm-hmm. We kill them by lethal injection
and gas.
And basically in cities and counties all over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's all kind of well hidden here. I guess that's part of it. When they do it there, it's more everybody sees it.
Right.
But there are, you know, stray dogs. I mean, like, we go down to Ecuador from time to time, and it's interesting to go to other cultures and see how people have a completely different mentality about dogs and pets than we do. You know, these animals are basically on their own totally. They have to survive
absolutely
on their own.
Mexico's like that. I drove in and I told one of my friends who was traveling with me, who happened to be Mexican, and I said, wow, your dogs have more freedom than people in America.
Yeah.
And you know what? Those dogs know how to take care of themselves, and they don't bother anybody. You never see, like, dogs hit in the street by a car. I mean, they're smart, pretty damn smart dogs.
They're very, very smart. And they're, to me, I just find them to be beautiful. I mean, they're very, very humble, and they get along with each other, basically. They found their place.
Right, but when Americans hear, oh, dogs getting killed in another country, or, oh, how disgusting, people eat dogs.
Yeah.
In other cultures.
That's the thing. That's really, I think, the greatest wound that we have is this compartmentalization. We learn to compartmentalize our emotions, you know. Mm. If someone mistreats a pig, we go, oh, good. And if someone mistreats a dog, we tear our hair out and scream. And what is the real difference? The difference isn't not in the suffering of the animal. It's in our perception of their suffering and of the animal themselves. So we...
Right. So here, I guess we do have our holy cow in America, and it happens to be dogs and horses.
Right.
You know, oh, they're selling horse flesh for food. Oh, that's disgusting. That's terrible.
Right.
So in a way, we have our, you know, our sacred animals, too.
Right.
But the truth is, and, you know, all I could think of, I think it's PETA's posters where they have the little cute pup on a plate and says, would you eat me? What's the difference?
Right.
No, there really is no difference.
Right.
You either do or you don't. It doesn't really matter, you know, if in truly, you know, people that believe in the Bible and God, et cetera, they
right.
have to realize that, you know, the Bible says it, you know, and one passage I always remembered, you know, as a kid, was if a bird falls out of a tree, God is aware of it.
Exactly.
Okay, so if he feels that way for a bird... Do they think that he's any more prejudiced towards one animal or another being mistreated?
Exactly. Right. Yeah, and that I think is really one of the underlying problems that we have, why we just don't seem to be able, I think, to get to the root of our war and racism and so forth, is this compartmentalization. We can just put people into a compartment of enemy or of another race or, like you said, you know, another lifestyle. And because we practice doing that every morning when we have bacon for breakfast and every lunch when we have a burger and every dinner when we have fish sticks, you know, we practice compartmentalizing animals at the time we've been born into mm-hmm. those we care about and those we don't care about. And until we are able somehow, I think...
Don't you think that translates into the way we also relate to other cultures, humans?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's
pick
how it translates
choose.
That. It's this mentality, I call it in the book, a mentality of exclusion. We learn to exclude certain beings from the sphere of our compassion, and we learn to include other ones. And I remember growing up, like you were saying, in the church I went to, you know, we were going to all go to this exclusivist heaven that was just for us,
mm-hmm.
you know, who have this exclusive... belief system, and everyone else, well, they can burn in hell, you know, we don't care about them, but, you know, we're going to go to heaven, because what we do to animals, we do to each other, and we create that mentality of exclusion.
And really that, also that mentality of being better than.
Right.
And they're lesser than. You know, that reminds me of a joke, might as well tell you, I think you'll get a kick out of it.
Uh-huh.
Some Catholic or Christian dies, and he goes supposedly up to heaven. And St. Peter tells him, well, I'm going to show you what your options are. You know, in this, you know, they pass one room, there's loud music, tambourines, everything. He looks inside. Everybody's having a great time. And he goes, well, these are the Southern Baptists, he says. You know, they're having a good time, this and that. And the guy goes, wow, that's cool. And then he takes him to another room where, you know, they're real Roman Catholics. They're all down on their knees praying with their rosary beads, et cetera. And he goes, and this is, you know, where the Catholics are. He says, but we're going to have to tiptoe past this next room. And the guy says, why? And he says, well, that's the Jehovah's Witnesses, and they think they're the only ones up here.
I know, it's exactly
couldn't help myself. I had to
we create all these all these walls, you know, of our beliefs. Most people don't think that that's just part of our human nature, but I believe it's not. It comes out of the rituals that we engage in for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. This mentality of exclusion and learning to do that at such a deep level, it just it becomes natural to us. We have to do it.
Well, I know that I think it was a couple weeks ago I sent you World Watch Institute's latest report.
Right.
And it was about our global diet and what the most costly ingredients are. And they said meat and seafood. They say consumption of meat and fish is growing rapidly worldwide, but producing this food on a large scale generates enormous health and environmental problems. And that meeting the demand for meat and seafood in alternative ways could protect the ecosystem and small farmers. And they did a whole big, report on how do we minimize the environmental impact of eating meat and seafood. I'm sure you know California now has got a moratorium on salmon.
Right. All the salmon are just disappeared. They're all dead.
Right. And I don't think that, you know, if people don't want to worry about their health or the torture to animals, they need to look at, especially if they're part of this new Christian fundamental movement to save the environment, the damage this does to the environment.
Right. Yeah, if people don't care about animals, which is a tragedy in my mind, but if they don't for some reason, they can at least care about the earth and the ecosystems or starving people. And there's no question that eating a diet with meat, dairy, and eggs is absolutely devastating the environment on multiple levels. I go into that in my book in a lot of detail, but what's interesting is like this report you mentioned, it really is, you know, they're saying things that everyone who's looked into this at all over the last 10 or 20 or 30 years really by now knows is true, and yet it still doesn't make it to the mass media. You know, this message
is
pressed by the mass media that people, you know, that meat, dairy, and eggs and fish especially are so terrible to the environment. No one wants to hear that, and the corporations for sure don't want people to know it. So, I think it's time for us to do whatever we can to understand this, spread the message like we're doing here.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's a huge connection. You know, I was talking to somebody recently who said that she no longer wants to go fishing, and she just talks about some fish that have like two heads that she's pulled out of the ocean. One of her friends wanted to talk her into having dinner on that, and she's like, are you kidding me? That fish has two heads. Who knows what else it's got?
Gosh, I'd like to mention a little bit about fish, actually, because last week a pretty amazing thing happened. I have a friend, actually, but he's pretty famous in the animal rights movement. His name is Paul Watson. He's the founder of the Greenpeace. He was the co-founder of Greenpeace. He's a Canadian, but then he left Greenpeace and started his own organization called the Sea Shepherd Society. And they are, I think, the most effective organization to actually confront and try to stop some of the worst abuses that happen to the oceans on this planet, especially the whaling by Norway, Japan, Iceland, and Russia, and also the killing of the seals by the Canadians, hundreds of thousands, 300,000 this year, 275,000.
All right.
Baby seals are being clubbed. But they were just down in the South Pacific Ocean near Antarctica, where the Japanese whaling expedition goes every year, which there's a loophole in the international whaling regulations that allows only Japan to kill whales, supposedly for science, but it's not. It's for consumption. They sell whale meat in the schools. Mm-hmm. Nobody really even wants it, but they just do it.
Right.
And they're killing lots of whales down there, and they have it's like a whole operation with lots of ships. And then this one gigantic mothership that is like the floating slaughterhouse for whales. And when they kill them, then they they bring all these whales onto this mother ship, huge, gigantic ship called the Nishimaru, and then they process them there and so forth. And so they use these exploding harpoons. And the basic mentality behind the whole thing is that these whales are eating too many fish. You know, and the reason Iceland is now begun whaling again is that they're saying that you know whales are eating too many fish, and so a lot of the and same with Norway and Russia. There's this whole pressure on whales and on seals. The reason the seals are being decimated by the Canadian fishermen is that they say the seals are eating up all the fish, and the biologists who study the whole thing say that's ridiculous. It's the human rapacity. We're basically overfishing in banks, and now codfish and other fish are on the brink of extinction because of human overfishing.
Right.
That actually seals, you know, for millions of years have coexisted with the cod and actually help the population. And when the first Europeans came to this, to North America, they thought their ships were going to run aground on the fish. They were so thick and so plentiful, it was like a solid wall of fish. And now they're completely decimated, the fisheries are collapsed, and we're taking it out on whales and dolphins, and the Japanese are killing a lot of dolphins also for eating fish, and on seals and other animals, and the human appetite for fish is absolutely infinitesimal, because not only do we want a lot of fish for us to eat directly, but also there, you know, 50% of the fish that are caught are actually fed to livestock. They're, you know, cows, they discovered, give a lot more milk if you feed them meat. And one of the cheaper forms of meat besides roadkill and slaughterhouse waste is fish. And so they found they give more milk and there's more fat in the milk. So they're feeding them a lot of fish. And then there's what's called bycatch, which are all the fish that they can't really use, and plus seabirds like albatrosses, plus dolphins and other animals that they can't use that are thrown back dead into the water. So a commercial fishing operations are devastating the ocean. And what Paul Watson has been doing, basically, is harassing the Japanese whaling ships and also a lot of the big illegal long-line fishing operations that are run out of Taiwan and China and Japan as well. I think a number of countries have them. I think Spain does too. And they do this bottom trawling, which is destroying the bottom of the ocean. And basically, there's no one out there to protect the ocean. So what was interesting was last week, he was standing on the deck of his ship, and they were confronting the Nishimaru, the Japanese mother ship.
Right.
And they started, the Japanese ship started throwing onto their ship, which was much smaller, of course, much smaller ship, these exploding devices that were exploding. And while that was happening, they weren't hurting anybody, but they were making these big explosions right around the ship. And, while that happened, suddenly Paul Watson was shot in the chest by a rifle.
Wow.
And he was wearing a Kevlar undervest and also a metal badge. The shot hit him right in the heart, directly.
Huh.
And there's been a number of analysis about this, but basically what one analyst said was that, you know, he was not wearing enough protection for that not to have killed him. If it had been a regular high-powered rifle, it would have gone right through that and killed him on the spot. But they used a special bullet, apparently, according to the preliminary investigation of this, called a dum-dum, which is basically a very soft lead bullet that's been illegal for like 60 years by the Geneva Convention. No one can use these bullets. They're extremely devastating. I mean, it's a very soft metal. If it goes into a human body, it just it basically just flattens out and kills a person by making them bleed to death and devastating their organs. So it's just under the Geneva Convention, they were banned, and no one's used them since.
Right.
Apparently, the Japanese used a dum-dum on him because they thought that would for sure kill him.
Right.
And the fact that he had this Kevlar thing and this badge stopped it, because it was a dum-dum and an illegal bullet. But it just shows, I think, the lengths to which they're willing to go to, to stop any resistance to the devastation of the ocean. And so this...
Right, the raping and pillaging of the ocean.
Exactly.
And then, you know, you said earlier a lot of the overfishing, et cetera, especially when they take that, feed it to livestock, which are normally herbivore, by the way, has devastated the ocean. But the other flip side is it's the livestock's waste and manure and everything that's devastating the ocean from the land to the water. So we've created an imbalance in nature through our greed.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Now, what did you think about that new law they passed in Canada for more humane slaughtering of the Canadian seals?
Oh, humane slaughter.
I said humane slaughter. There's an oxymoron.
Yeah, I know.
They can still club them and beat them and shoot them, but then they have to make sure they cut their arteries if it's not dead. That's their idea of humane slaughter.
Well, they're trying to do, right, exactly. It's basically a PR campaign because people are protesting and Canada doesn't want to lose their reputation or something like that.
Right. One of my listeners sent me a while back a T-shirt that says Club Soda, not Seals.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know what? I always get a good reaction when I wear that because people really love seals because they're so damn cute.
And they think that these seals are just being clubbed. They don't really know why, but it's really our fish eating that's the underlying driving force of that.
Right.
And so one of the things, when I first knew Paul Watson, he was just basically a pro-fish guy. You know, that's all he cared about. And he was not a vegan. He was he ate dairy and eggs and so forth. And then, but after a few years, he looked into it and he, a little deeper, and he realized that so much of the fish of the ocean environment and of fish themselves are being devastated by dairies and egg operations. Not only are they feeding fish to these animals, but just the pollution of all this destroying the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only alternative, so everyone is now a vegan that goes on that ship. It's interesting.
Well, you know, I think that sooner or later we'll be forced to all be vegan because there'll be nothing else to eat. And maybe we won't even have grain. Maybe they'll be using grain for gasoline. So we can continue to starve 3/4 of the Earth's population.
Right.
Until, one day maybe we will get to Soylent Green. Soylent Green is people.
Right.
I'll tell you what, I've often wondered, why don't we recycle dead humans and eat that? It's just as disgusting as most of the stuff they're selling us anyway.
Well, it's true. Sometimes people say that we humans are the top of the food chain. We're like we're the top predators.
Mm-hmm.
But if you really look at what we're eating, we never go out and like a predatory animal. We never act like them. We never, jump on a live animal with our mouth and claws and bring it down like a wolf or a bear or an eagle or some, truly predatory animal does. We're much more, what we call it is necrovores. We eat death. We're like vultures, basically, or opossums or some animal that eats stuff that's been already killed for them. Somebody will stab it and then kill the animal and then we eat it. But it's not natural for us. No one sees a dead animal by the side of the road and start salivating and thinking, I want to just, eat that. Or even see a live animal like a cow or a deer and think, I want to just jump on that animal and just eat them like a carnivore does. It's totally against our nature, and yet we're so absolutely oblivious to our true nature, what we really are, that we eat this stuff and act absurdly, like we're essentially carnivorous.
Right.
That shows a deep disconnection, I think, from our true nature, and we end up creating a whole economic social order that's based on this very predatory, competitive, violent way that we eat.
Right, but we've all been convinced to eat that way since we were little.
We've just been convinced. We've been brainwashed, and it's so hard for people to question it because that they have that they never arrived at freely on their own.
Hey, I wrestled with it for a long time myself, you know. So I know that there are people listening that are probably saying, oh, God, not this topic again. But, you know, and that's how I used to feel.
Right, I know.
And I think by keeping it real and really talking about the issues, you know, there are many issues involved here besides our taste buds. You know, this is really creating our own death on so many levels.
Right.
And now, you know, you have China who wants to lift their one child per family. You know, you got China building a middle class. You got China who wants as many cars as we have.
Well, and as much meat as we have. That's
exactly
the other.
That's where I was going. I mean,
yeah.
The world cannot feed its population at the growth level it's going.
Right. No,
so somebody's going to have to die.
Right.
So, you know.
Yeah.
It's deep. I mean, you got to look at so many aspects of it.
It's so deep. You know, it's true. It just goes and deeper and deeper and deeper. The connections just spiral, you know, out forever into every dimension of our life. We see our connection with animals, with our food, with the way our mentality into our every dimension of our spiritual lives, our social lives, our relationships with people, with others, our international level.
Right. I mean, you know, this coming weekend is the Christian Easter. So you know there's going to be a lot of ham. So there's going to be a lot of dead pigs.
Right.
For some Italian families, you know, their choice of dish is rabbit, which is another animal that turns a lot of Americans off.
Right.
And, you know, it's really continuing those sacrifices to a violent God.
Right.
Within what they call religious rites.
Right.
Without really acknowledging the beauty that we all are as creators.
Right. And the beauty of nature and the beauty of these animals and having a sense of honor and respect of that. You know, there's a really wonderful poem. You know this poem by Shel Silverstein? I think it points to the heart of it. He's like, you know Shel Silverstein? He's a great poet. He was a black American, passed away a while ago, but he wrote a lot of poems. And I remember... I can recite this short poem. It's
called, go ahead, recite it. You got my curiosity up.
It's called Point of View. I think it goes to the heart of it. Point of View. It goes like this. Thanksgiving dinners, sad and thankless. Christmas dinners, dark and blue. When you stop and try to see it from a turkey's point of view. Sunday dinner isn't sunny. Easter feasts are just bad luck. When you see it from the viewpoint of a chicken or a duck. Oh, how I once loved tuna salad, steak and lobster, lamb chops too, till I stopped and looked at dinner from the dinner's point of view.
Huh.
That's it, you know, and it's
basic. That's great.
It's a great poem. It's just, you know, it helps us to see. It's all about our point of view, you know, and...
Yeah, sounds like the name of my show with Richard Grove.
Okay.
Maybe it's one of his favorite poems, too.
Uh-huh.
You know, but, no, you're absolutely right. And, you know, when we're kids, if you remember, I'm sure you still hear the expression, Will, you are what you eat. And I remember every Thanksgiving saying to my family members, you are what you eat.
Wow.
And they would look at that turkey and, you know, be calling somebody a turkey is not a compliment.
Exactly. I know, we reduce these... animals, but it's true, you know, we're eating the energy of these animals, and I think we feel so much better when we eat the spirit and energy of beautiful, I mean, there's nothing more beautiful when you look at them as you know, cauliflower and broccoli and pumpkin.
Absolutely.
Carrots, I mean, you know, apples and cherries, I mean, these are things that are just, we
right.
just love looking, they're just basically beautiful, and they have quality and character to them, and The looking at the flesh of brutalized animals and the blood is such a miserable, horrible thing. I think there's no reason a lot of people don't like to cook. You know?
Right. Well, there's another loss of art.
Up this flesh. And, oh, no.
Right. And, you know, there were times when, you know, I was raising my kids whatever.
Yeah.
And I guess it depended on my hormone level where I couldn't do it. I couldn't stuff a chicken or I couldn't stuff a turkey because I would just heave.
Right.
So, you know, obviously my subconscious was talking to me, but I wasn't picking up on it. But, you know, watching somebody butcher a chicken or something, man, that was like the worst.
Oh, I know.
But, you know, it is hard. It takes a long time. I think it starts with an education, and then you got to wait for your eureka moment where you really get it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. No one can actually make that happen for anyone else.
Absolutely not. I know nobody could force me into it. I had to do it when I was ready.
Right, exactly. Yep.
Well, Will, this was a very pleasant hour.
Thank you. It's been great. I've really enjoyed it, too.
Me, too. So I guess we'll look forward to next month's next month's Food for Thought.
Right. Yeah, and in the meantime, anyone, I just encourage everyone to post it with Maria. And we've got some changes also on our website, which is theworldpeacediet.org. Do things there, too. So.
Oh, good.
Stay in touch. Yep.
All right. Well, take good care, and we'll talk soon.
Great.
Take care, Will.
Yeah, bye.
Will Tuttle, the World Peace Diet, eating for spiritual health and social harmony. And yes, I'm going to keep at it until we all get it, because like I keep telling people, without a planet, we have no place to live. And without a healthy body, what's the point in living? That's the flip side of it. There's no point living long if you can't live well. Anyway, thanks for supporting the show. Thanks for sharing the information you learn with others, and I'll see you guys next time.
In a world of fear, hatred, and insanity, there is one place to find peace and information without any hidden agenda. The Maria Show. Maria comes from a place of love for all living things, a wry New York wit, and a keen eagle eye on the bad guys, thanks to a great intuition and clarity of mind. Maria does the homework so you don't have to. Maria recognizes the dangers of our times and puts out constant information on how to fight the reptilian agenda of control over the whole planet. From your diet to the government conspiracies, Maria will awaken your mind and free your soul. Subscribe today. If you can afford to subscribe over the requested amount, your soul will be rewarded for helping this brave woman continue on in her fight for real truth, real justice, and the real American way. www.maria.net. That's www.meria.net. We are the ones you've been waiting for, and we didn't come here to lose.